Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime!
Another Fresh Picked Pod from audio2u.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 106 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, and with me on the line once again via Skype from Melbourne, Mr. Shelton Tigger Muller. How are you, mate?
Jim Tigger, mate. Jim Tigger.
What?
Jim Tigger. Jim Carrey. Remember? I'm a combination of Jim Carrey. Okay.
Jim Tigger. Tigger.
So, right. So just call me. The name's Jim, but they call me Jim. Anybody who's watched Blazing Saddles will remember that line. Yeah, Jim Tigger, apparently. Right, but okay. Thank you. Yes, I'm back. And thank you to all the people who...
Can you do it with an Irish brogue, like Sean Connery? Like
Name's Tigger. Jim. Jim Tigger.
That's the one.
Yes, money penny. Yes, I thank you to all those people who wished my wife well. Really appreciate that. She's much better now. Thank you all very, very much. And I'm getting emails from, I got an email from Steve and Vicky saying...
Oh, yes, Steve Mayfield. Yep.
Yeah, sorry to hear that Carrie's not well. Hope she gets better soon. And I'm thinking, Steve and Vicky. I didn't want to email back and say, I'm sorry.
Who are you?
Yeah, I know some Steves and I know some Vickies, but I don't know if I know a Steve and a Vicky. And then I'm realizing that Bruce has put it up on the podcast site on audio2u.com that Carrie's not well. So people are going, sorry to hear that, because they're nice people. Essentially, people at heart are nice. So thank you very much to Steve Mayfield. Steve and Vicky.
Steve Mayfield has been a long-time listener to Building the Pod on Sign Language and obviously listens to Shutters Inc. as well. So.
Good on you, Steve. Thank you both. And to Clarissa, thank you very, very much. Really appreciate that. But I suppose before we get into continuing our theme on weddings, which everybody seems to be enjoying, which is great, just to handle a couple of emails.
Sure.
Clarissa, who you just sent to me this morning. Hey, Bruce and Shelton. First of all, get well, Carrie. Thank you very much, Clarissa. She did. Thank you. I have an idea for a segment or even a show once all the wedding podcasts are done. Could you perhaps talk about filters? I know you guys have touched on them a bit, but it's one of the things about photography that no matter how many books I read, still doesn't explain as well as I wish they did. Specifically, I'm curious about the difference between circular polarizers and warming circular polarizers, as well as the vast array of ND filters. Also, what brands would you recommend and why? Anyway, thanks for your help, and I look forward to the next show. Smiley colon thing. Thank you. You know the little dots with the
emoticon.
Emoticon, yes. Actually, no, this is just the keyboard version. Mm. But, thank you, Clarissa. We will do that. And if you go back through the podcast, we have talked about filters a few times, but you've got some specific questions there, so we can certainly handle that to put a sell onto Shutters Inc., and God forbid we should ever do that. I am going to have something very interesting up and running for you all soon, and that is, of course, the website that I have talked about, which is being built by a designer in the States for us. And basically, it is going to be a website of 5-minute video tutorials, one of which will be about filters, Clarissa. So when I get that up and running, and that should be in the next couple of weeks, we'll let you all know, and we hope that you'll be all there to support the site. And trust me, it will be well worth your having a look, because the YouTube version of one of my little videos has gone off like a bag of prawns in the sun.
Yep.
I believe that this is a great way to teach photography. This podcast is great, but I think there's a lot of room for little videos.
The visual medium as well.
Exactly. So we'll let you all know when this is up and running. It is in the final stages of development, and we'd really appreciate your support. There will be Shutters Inc. listeners who will be getting free memberships, but membership is not going to be expensive. We'll probably be looking at about $29.95 Australian for a full year, $49.95 Australian. So in American dollars, that's what, 17 cents or something per annum. So, you know, it will be a very, very inexpensive site to belong to. It will have video tutorials, it will have forums and feedbacks and articles that you can read. It will be a complete sort of photography website whereby you can just go there and learn techniques and understand things a little bit better. So please let me know if you have any ideas or desires to know any more, but trust me, in the next couple of weeks, you'll be hearing a lot more about our website. But that will be one of the things that you'll we'll be dealing with, Clarissa, and we can certainly also handle that on the podcast for you as well. So thanks for that. Of course, we had some other emails. Philip Chan, who also says, I do hope your wife is feeling better. Thank you, people, very, very much. Very nice of you. And of course, he went through the he asked me originally, Philip did. Hello, Philip, about the lenses that I use on my weddings. And I suggested that he go back and listen again to our first one of our first wedding podcasts. He's come back with another question. Or a couple of questions that about the two lenses that I use on weddings, the Tamron AF 17-50 2.8 and the Nikkor 85-1.8 that I use. Being your two main lenses you use during a wedding photography session, I was also wondering what wide-angle lens do you use? Also, is there a big difference between a wide-angle lens and an ultra-wide-angle? Yes, there is. The 17-50 I consider a wide-angle because it's 17 mil, which in ancient 35mm terms was about a 28, 27-28. So, yes, it is a wide-angle lens. An ultra-wide-angle lens is, yes, very wide, and I use the 11-18 Tamron, which is a beautiful little lens and not expensive. And at 11 mil, trust me, it's very, very
super wide.
Yeah, the equivalent of, say, a 16 or 17 mil in 35 mil terms.
I can't imagine you using that a hell of a lot for a wedding, though.
Well, there are times when you really want to get that, you know, it's not about fitting everything in, you know, it's about using it because it has some really cool perspective.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll use it, you know, to create an optical effect, you know, with a bride and groom in the foreground, the bridal party in the background. And of course, because the lens pushes everything back, you get this real super wide angle effect. I don't use it often, though, that's true. But where I've used it, it's been very effective. There's a picture on my Flickr site that has a bride and a groom underneath the bough of a tree, and the bough of the tree comes right down into the corner of the camera. And I put the 11 mil lens right up next to the bough of the tree and let it come, you know, and if you go to the Flickr site, you'll see the image. That was with the 11 mil wide angle. Couldn't have been done, wouldn't have been seen the same way if I'd used the 17. So, yes, I do use the ultra wide, and it is very, very handy. But I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't say you'd need it all the time, like you say, Bruce. He says, can you give me some guidance on what kind of lens I should be looking for? Do people in portrait photography? I use a Nikon D80 and would consider upgrading in the Nikon range of camera bodies. Well, your Nikon D80 is fine, really, Philip. You don't need anything more than a D80. It's a gorgeous camera, and you'll do just fine with that. I would spend my money on lenses, in which case I would get the 85 1.8. I just love that lens, live in that lens. If you don't want an 85 1.8, get the Tamron 90 2.8. That is such a superb piece of glass, and will suffice also beautifully as a portrait lens. So you'd have a two-in-one there if indeed you wanted that. For portrait work, though, sometimes if you're in available light and you want to minimize depth of field, you want that extra stop, the 85 1.8 will not do you wrong. I had a look at a lens yesterday. I was up in Sydney yesterday. I should have popped in to say good day to you, Bruce.
Yeah.
But I couldn't, mate. I'm sorry. I went straight from the airport out to Homebush. And, of course, Homebush is where the big stadium of the Olympics were held in 2000. Yeah. And met with the good people at who import Tamron, and we met with myself and other editors of the photo mags, Pete Eastway, Paul Burrows, James Ostinger, Robin Nichols, all us friends. We're all good friends, actually. Even though we have competing magazines, we're all good friends. And we all met and sat in a room, and we met with the Tamron people, and they've got a new lens coming out, the 70-200 2.8. And the Australian price point...
It's 2.8 the whole range?
Constant 2.8. Now, here's the great thing about it. It is a beautiful piece of glass. It really is. And it's a very nice lens. It's about 1150 grams. It's very lightweight for a lens of its class. But in the Australian price point, it's going to be a killer. In Australian dollars, it's $999.
Right.
Which for 2.8, 70-200 is...
pretty good.
Absolutely. They're going to package it up with a 28-75 2.8 so that you'll have 28 to 200 in constant 2.8 for $16.99, which for the quality of that glass will be very, very good. But that lens, I would seriously consider. It'll be even cheaper in American dollars, of course. I don't know where you live, Philip, I must admit, but either way, that's an excellent lens. And for the price, I could not, you know, I could not give it any higher praise. So that would might be another great lens for you to consider. The final question, and Carlos also asked a very similar question. I'll get to your email in a minute, Carlos. I also have another question on knowing how to price your images. How can you assess the value stroke worth of your images to set a price for people to buy? Being that we are in the digital age, a lot of images can be transferred electronically without any more or without much material cost, other than the cost of your camera. And that's true. Carlos asks a similar question, and I'll just find his email because it's in the same vein. Carlos, I love you guys, Rivera. Hello, Carlos. How you doing? Our last mentoring moments have been great. Your wedding photography information is fantastic, he says. I do have a few more questions on and off the subject. In wedding photography, how does one come up with the numbers? How does a photographer come up with the prices? This is a very daunting task for me. So it's a very good question and a very difficult one to answer because there are lots of things to consider. But because we are on the subject of weddings, let's talk about them because I haven't mentioned it. I should have perhaps mentioned it at the beginning. But, you know, I was planning of using it, wrapping it up at the end. But that, seeing as this is the question that's come in, I won't wait any longer to answer it. So I suppose the first thing you have to do is say, well, what am I worth? But balance that off with the fact that you're going to be a little bit modest and a little bit humble about your own abilities often, unless, of course, you tend to exaggerate your abilities, and I've seen that done, whereby it's rubbish photography at exorbitant prices. But, you know, I don't think from the sound of either of you two guys that that will be the case, especially if you're questioning how much to, you know, charge. I would suggest that you'll probably be on the other end of the scale, whereby you will underestimate
your value.
Like the rest of us, because guys who charge through the nose often have no problem overestimating their abilities and just trying to make as much money as they can, and half their luck, unfortunately, as I've said on this podcast, a lot of the photography is just utter, it's just feculent. It is just the most feculent abomination I have ever seen. So, you know, I hope you get rich and stay happy, but I'm sorry, I won't call that photography. Look, I had an interesting conversation with some friends of mine while I was away last year in November. And Paul, I think I may have mentioned this on the podcast. I don't know, but if you're recognizing it, Bruce, give me a hoy. Okay. Stop me in my tracks. But Paul is a good friend of mine and a fellow photographer. He works in other fields, but he loves photography, and he came away with us. And it was a bit rainy one morning, so we all just stayed in, and we had a coffee, and we're standing around, sitting around talking, you know, cleaning our cameras and whatnot. And basically, he said, Shelton, your prices are ridiculous. You know, you're Shelton Muller, he said. And I thought, yeah, so what? Who am I, you know? And he said, no. He said, look, you know, you're a humble guy and you underestimate yourself, but I tell you what, you should be charging a whole lot more for your weddings than you do. And the question he asked me was, he said, look, when people call you, what is their question? What do they ask you? And I said, well, their first question is, are you available on this date? And he said, bingo. Bingo, that's exactly how you know what your value is. Because he says, by the time they've got you on the phone, they've seen your work. They just don't care what you charge. They want you for their wedding day. So their major concern is, are you available?
Yeah.
And once you say you're available, they sigh a big sigh of relief. And then when you tell them your price, they secretly laugh and go, yeah, that's great. You have to put your prices up, he said. And so I did, not as much as he suggested that I would or should, but I did a little bit. And, you know, I haven't had any negative repercussions as a result of doing so. But of course, I also have to look at my competition. I also have to look at what people will charge for the service that I offer, particularly. And what is presently being charged for the kind of service that I offer, irrelevant of who people might think I am or whatever. You know, I mean, I put my pants on one leg at a time like everybody else, and I have a family to feed like everybody else, you know. So it you've got to be very realistic. But Philip, it is never about what it costs us. the fact that our images are taken digitally and cost us nothing, essentially, is irrelevant. I'm actually charging more now shooting digitally than I did with film. I'm making more money, that's true, but I am also putting a little bit more work in. But, you know, I'm not charging for what it costs me. I'm charging for what I believe it's worth. And therein is that you're actually doing something other people can't do. Let me say that again. You are doing something other people can't do. Now, Philip, Carlos, when you call in a plumber, to fix your taps, he's doing something other people can't do, and he'll charge you. If you ask a lawyer to write a letter, he is doing something other people can't do, and he will charge you. Trust me, you know, and so remember that that's how you come up with your price, that you are doing something valuable and it should have a value attached. Just because it's costing you a little bit, you've still had to invest your time, your camera equipment, the hours and days of time it's taken you to, years of time it's taken you to perfect your craft. And you walk onto that wedding set and you just confidently say, don't worry, I can take care of this. Now, not everybody can do that. I spoke with some university students the other day. They invited me down to speak, and I was talking about wedding photography. And they all sort of went, they tend to poo-poo the wedding photographers, because up above them in the upper echelons of the learning photographers at university, they all want to be commercial photographers, and they poo-poo the wedding photographer as if he's some sort of low-life, you know, guy who's backyarder. And I just said, look, I'm sorry, but you put a commercial photographer on a wedding, he won't know what to do. He's so used to the perfect environment of studios and soft boxes and psychs and, you know, time and budgets. And so he wouldn't know what to do. But you put a wedding photographer in a studio and tell him to photograph that box of soap suds, he can do it. That's the thing. And they all nodded. They all agreed. But they said their other thing was, I don't know whether I want to do wedding photography because I'd hate to muck it up, you know. And I said, look, you won't, because what you'd consider to be a fairly average photograph is better than what most people can take. You have a high standard of work, you know, you have a high visual standard in your head, and so you may have an aspiration to take this kind of photograph, you may aim for the stars and only get to the moon, but I tell you what, your moon is better than most other people's attempts to get there. So, Philip, you and Carlos, you come up with the numbers based on what people are charging around you. If you're better than them, charge more. And if you get a lot of bookings, charge a little bit more. Because people aren't worried about your price. They're actually just hoping that you're available. And if your price is good, even better. But, you know, you can probably charge that little bit more to say, well, look, my work is worth this much. And I'll tell you now, if people call me and negotiate on price, I tell them very openly, I say, look, I'm not a hard businessman, I'm really not, but there's one thing I don't do is negotiate my price. I've set my price because that's what I'm worth. Other people are happy to pay it because they know that's what I'm worth. If you don't believe that's what I'm worth, I really don't want to photograph your wedding. I mean, no offense, but either you value what I bring at that price, or, you know, and I will bring a lot more than just a photographer. I will bring a service and I will bring a lot of other things that we've talked about, but I will not negotiate on my price. It's a very good price and I am worth at least that much. And I've never had a problem with that. There's only one person who's ever turned me down based on that negotiation. I can't afford that. Okay, well, I understand that, but I can't do anything about that. I'm very sorry. You know, other people have to pay it, so do you.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. I'm not hard-nosed about it, but the moment you start saying I'm only worth this much, then you start believing it. And I battle with that. You know, and I'm told time and time again, you know, to set my prices higher. I believe I am the more realistic of them because these are my friends, and you know, they're very nice to me, and they believe, you know, good things about me. I also know the very realistic world that I live in, and I know that I have to be competitive as well as. And I believe in, you know, under-promising and over-delivering. So if I have an excellent price and I give a good product, these people are going to recommend me, and I'm just going to continue to work. So find that balance. I can't tell you exactly what to charge in terms of dollars, but I would suggest that you get on the web or you ring local photographers or get a girlfriend or someone to ring local photographers, find out their prices. You know, probably you'll find a lot of information from a lot of local photographers in your area as to, you know, just on the web about prices. and you know, find out what services they are offering. I would go a little left of that, you know, because if you're just, if you're competing on the same level, I offer this many pages and this kind of album, la 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 la. I don't do that. What I offer is my photography, and that's what I sell. I'm not into packages, because packages are exactly that. They're packages, and I don't like packaging people, packaging weddings, and packaging my photography. So my services are very, very different.
Question for you.
Yeah.
Do you quote one price for the whole day, or do you quote an hourly rate?
I quote a price for the whole day, and I find that works for me, because they're able to say, oh, look, you know, we're going to be here and here and here. And I just say, look, it's irrelevant how much time and how many locations. The only thing I don't do is the reception. I don't stay very long at the reception. I do what needs to be done, and then I go. But they like the fact that they're not being charged according to how long their wedding is going to run.
Yep.
But other photographers will charge by the hour. And in Melbourne here, it's about $400 an hour at least.
Right.
You know, by guys who really, you know, great guys who charge by the hour. And then and these are guys who, like me, hand over the digital images on disk, which is what I do, because I don't have time to be designing albums in Photoshop or other programs, and I don't want to do it. Right. I just want to be able to do the job and, you know, give them their product, make them very, very happy, and move on. So that's what I do, and I like doing that. I don't care about doing the whole album thing. There's a lot of money to be made in albums, a lot, but I don't want to do it. If that's what you want to do, do something a little bit left of center, and you know, you'll do very, very well. There's a great company, and I'll tell you this next week. I'll do some research. A great company that a good friend of mine, Greg Bayer, has found, who are an Indonesian-based album design company, and they are fantastic. I don't know if they work everywhere, if their service is available to photographers all over the world, but they are available here in Australia, and their service is fantastic. In terms of design and the quality of albums they produce.
You send them the raw images and they lay it all up?
You send them a CD of the images that that you've got. They will design it for you and put it in an album and send it back.
Wow.
Yeah, and they do a nice job. You know, a really nice job. They allow you to make a couple of changes too, and then you know, they send it to you as an electronic file, so you can look at how it's designed. And then you say, oh, actually, I'd like this image there and this image there, but otherwise right. It's good. Then you send them back that information. They design it up. They print it. They put it into the album, in a book style.
Yep.
And then, they send it back to you.
Wow.
All done. So you don't really have to do anything other than prepare your images and send them off on a disc to the company. Now, I will get back to you next week. Now, I want everybody to email me to remind me to do this so that I can tell you the company and give you the URL or the contact details. One of the best wedding services I've ever seen. Just fantastic. So I hope that helps you guys. Carlos, I've seen your work, and don't undercharge. Philip, I haven't seen yours, my friend. But Carlos, I have seen yours, and you do some lovely stuff, mate. And I tell you what, people should pay for it. So look at your local competition. Give yourself a little bit of an edge, either in terms of the nature of your service or the nature of your price the nature of your photography, and take it from there. All I would suggest is that you make yourself a little bit different to the people around you in terms of what you offer, not just as a photographer, definitely as a photographer, but in terms of some nuance of service that you feel wedding couples miss out on, and then take it from there and off you go, and you'll do well. You'll do very well. But to be honest with you, the thing that will sell you, and I've talked about this on the podcast, is not your price, but your photography and who you are and what you as a person will bring to the wedding day. If you establish a rapport, a relationship, you will win. They'll just want you, you know, on the wedding day. That is very important to many couples. Very, very important. So I have a feeling that the two of you will do well there. Finally, Richard Annable. Got your email yesterday, Richard. Thank you. It's an interesting subject line. Damn you is the subject line. Now, I don't get too many emails that, you know, with the subject line, damn you. So naturally, of course, what I had to do, Bruce, was open it up and have a read.
Of course.
So it reads thus. After hearing, in brackets, once or twice, about your love of off-camera flash, I purchased a wireless flash trigger and receiver to give it a try myself. Let me tell you, if I ask my girlfriend, the lovely Lucy, to play Find the Flash again, it may not end up well for me. Damn you, Muller. Damn you, I say. This is fun, and I'm getting some great results. Damn you, Richard. Well, Richard, I don't think I've ever been told I love you so quite so nicely. And I'm glad you're having fun. It is just the most awesome thing. Off-camera flash, I'm seriously going to get into it some more. And one of the eventually one of the video tutorials we'll be doing on our new website will be about off-camera flash. So I'm glad you're having fun, Richard. And I tell you what, I want everybody to take a leaf out of Richard's book and get out there. I want more damn you emails, because it is just such a great way to manipulate light. Put it where you want it and how you want it. And I'm glad you're having fun, Richard. And I'm honored that I have played a small role in helping you discover this new aspect of your photography. So good on you, mate. I'm glad. I hope you get to come to one of the workshops I'm running soon, mate. It'd be nice to meet you in person. Either that, or we're just going to have to grab a coffee. We do live in the same city, don't we? So we're going to have to catch up. But look, we will. In fact, I probably owe you a wedding, Richard, because you keep asking me to come. So I'll get in contact with you soon on that front. So should we continue talking about weddings while Absolutely. We're on the subject? Because the week before we wound up finishing the ceremony, and of course the candid photography opportunities that abound after the ceremony. Immediately after the ceremony, what I like to do is just get the family group photographs over and done with. And I do that, if possible, I suggest to the couple that we do that, if possible, after the ceremony on the same grounds, because everybody's there. The people who count are going to be there, and the bride and groom are not too tired, they're still okay, so you let the hugs and kisses get out of the way, you let that die down, don't get in the way of that, you let that die down, and then you grab the bride and groom and you put them in a place, and you just set up for family group photographs. When I meet with the couple, I like to suggest to them before the wedding that between now and their wedding day, they sit down, the two of them, and they make a list. Photo number one, bride and groom, you know, Narelle and Bruce. Sorry, Bruce, it's just such an Australian name, I had to pull it out, you know, Narelle and Bruce. And I'll tell you what, we'll make it Narelle and Dave, shall we?
Okay.
Okay, Narelle and Dave, right?
And Shazza and Dazza.
Yep, Shazza and Dazza. And we'll put them in the middle. You know, so photo number one, Shazza and Dazza plus mum and dad, which is Bob and June, right? So you've got Shazza and Dazza and Bob and June. And write down their names, right? Now, that's photo number one. Bob and June are Shazza's mum and dad, right? Shazza is Australian for Sharon, everybody, just in case you're not. And Dazza is Barry. All right. So Dazza and Shazza plus
who
Bob
are now
and June.
Suffering from an identity crisis.
Identity crisis, yeah, that's right. Okay, no, they're very proud of being Dazza and Shazza in this country. Very, very proud indeed. And so that's photo number one. But if I've got this written down, photo number one, all I have to do, because I'll be standing, if I put the bride and groom somewhere, people just naturally gather. So you just go, okay, I need Bob and June, right? Bob and June, oh, of course, bride's mum and dad. Come on down, and you set them up. You know, mum is beside Dazza, and Bob is beside Shazza, and you set them up in a nice, close little group. That's photo number one. You've got your camera set on a tripod, so you don't have to move too much. You've got a zoom lens on so that you can vary according to the size of the group. It goes from wide angle to telephoto, because you'll get down to groups of three, you know, but you might end up with a group of 12 or something. So you need a good wide angle on your camera, but you really, you know, you just want it set up in the same place. You want to put the bride and groom in the light, somewhere nice. Doesn't have to be paradise, because most of the shot is going to be just of the people.
So what you're really saying there is, at that point in time, you really want a variable focal length lens on, not
Absolutely.
A prime.
Absolutely, because yeah, you want to get you don't want to be moving your tripod in and out. You know, it just is one of these things you want to get over and done with. You want nice photos, but you want it over and done with. Yeah. And you know what? So do the bride and groom. They want it over and done with as well, because it's not the fun part so much. It's actually a little bit difficult, you know, standing there smiling while family come in and out. You want to move through this as quickly as possible. So if you ask the bride and groom to put together a list and get that list to you either before the wedding day or on the wedding day, all you have to do is stand there with a piece of paper and call out names. So you've got the four of them, the bride's mum and dad plus the bride and groom, And then the natural progression is to keep the bride and groom with their mum and dad right there and add in the siblings, the brother and the sister, and then you add in the brother and the sister's partners, significant others, and or their children.
I would just add one thing to this, if you've got an assistant with you on the day, they could prove very handy in lining up the next couple for the following shot as you're shooting the previous shot.
Absolutely. Failing that, or even better yet, I actually get members of the bridal party, the best man, chief bridesmaid, because they are familiar with the family. Often they are the brother and the sister of the bride and the groom. So they know who the people are. And I just said, can you run around and make sure that they're not going anywhere, that they're not, you know, getting stuck into the Chardonnay? Can you please, you know, make sure that they're here? And if they're standing right there and all around you, then, you know, you can just call their names and they'll just come forward. You set them up nicely, you know, put them on nice little angles in and out. But you're absolutely right. If you've got the combination of the list, it means that the bride and the groom don't stand there on the wedding day going, oh, should we have Auntie Joan in this shot or should we have Auntie Joan? And they stand there and discuss it on their wedding day when they've just got married, for Pete's sake. So get them to do that list. And give it to you on or before the wedding day, so you've got it in your pocket and you pull it out and you just call out names. That does a lot of things. It relieves the bride and groom of stress. It means that you've got a logical order because they've written it down in logical order, and it means that you get it over and done with very, very quickly. Within 20 minutes, you can 10, 20 minutes, you can get the family group photos over and done with. And it, like I said, it doesn't need to be paradise, just a nice little spot where you, close to where they got married, outside the church, on the stairs, on the grass, you know, anywhere, and just, you know, fill them up, fill the shot up with people. This is a necessary evil, I often refer, you know, but where you got to do the family group photos, and sometimes there are interesting family dynamics of which you are not aware. Parents may have divorced, perhaps not amicably, but, you know, the bride wants them in the same photo because they're her parents, so you've got to be very careful how you deal with them, where you put them. Very interesting family dynamics you have to be very diplomatic with. But I find a sense of humor often works in getting people to do what you want them to do, to stand on certain angles or whatever, you know, you pick on their pot belly or whatever, you know, there's all sorts of things. I've often told, you know, Greg, who used to come on weddings with me, I trained him to become a wedding photographer. He kept asking me, how is it that you've managed to get through a wedding without being decked by the family? you know, but they all know I'm kidding. They all know I'm just having a bit of fun at their expense. And to be honest with you, you know, they give me stick right back. I remember saying once to this fellow who I was putting into a family group photo, he was standing there and his wife was just absolutely beautiful. And I looked at him and I said, how come all the ugly blokes get the beautiful women? You know? And he just looked at me and he smiled and he said, mate, if that's the case, your wife must be a supermodel. And I just looked and I just punched him on the shoulder and I said, good comeback. And we were friends, you know, that's the Australian culture. and that was great. But a good sense of humor always works. But get the family group photos over and done with and try and make that as stress-free and as fun as you possibly can. And, you know, the family love it. You know, they will have good memories of you, the photographer, if you make that whole thing fun and you joke around with people while you're doing it. They have a good time. Bride and groom are having a good time. They know you're in control. And that takes the load off their mind. Remember that probably, if you haven't done pre-ceremony groom photographs, this is the first experience the groom has with you on the job as the photographer. So it's good for him to understand that you've got it all under control and you're just going to have a lot of fun and the rest of the day is going to be good. So that's, you know, that's that. But then from there, off you go to your locations. Here's the hard part. We're going to probably spend a couple of weeks on this. I'm not sure yet. Depends on how we go today. But here is the hard part, really, because I can't really tell you what's going to happen. Because the bride and groom will give you all sorts of different, each bride and groom will give you different locations and, you know, different ideas for what they want. I suppose the principles remain, though. The principle that I have often taught on this podcast is find the light and put them in it. Often brides and grooms come up with locations that they think will really work. And they might be, you know, a nice park, you know, with lots of trees and flowers, because they think that that's what makes beautiful pictures. You, on the other hand, as the photographer, know that that's not what makes beautiful pictures, that light makes beautiful pictures, and that really your utilization of light is what's going to make all the difference. So I always, when I'm meeting with the couple beforehand, suggest that I try to explain that to them. I say it's really not about, you know, flowers and trees. It's about light. So to be honest with you, if we're going to go to a location or two or three, let's do some variations. In Melbourne, and I know this is true in Sydney, and I imagine it would be true of every city in the world, there are great places for photographs that offer a bride and groom quite a bit of variety within a short or within a, you know, a fairly limited
close geographical
area.
Radius.
Yeah. Thank you very much. What was that, Bruce?
A close geographical radius?
Close geographical radius, yes. a CGR. Within a CGR. That you can do, like in Melbourne, for instance, if you go down Flinders Lane in the city, right there you've got beautiful old buildings and alleyways that you can use with light. It's gorgeous, and the textures of the old brown stone buildings right next to St. Paul's Cathedral, the alleyway behind there is just gorgeous off Flinders Lane. There's a few laneways up from there running off Flinders Lane. There's a laneway that is just covered with colorful graffiti, and you've got bluestone cobblestone street with these old buildings that are just covered with this colorful graffiti. And the interesting thing, none of it is foul language. There's no four-letter words on the wall. It's just really cool, colorful graffiti all over the place. And it's awesome for wedding photography. There's a picture on my Flickr site of a girl standing there, the bride standing there laughing. And behind her is this graffitied wall and her husband sort of leaning in a doorway. And one of my favorite shots from that wedding, and it's just a great location, but literally a two-minute walk from where these, you know, we had only just a few minutes earlier done this gorgeous light texture brownstone sort of work in another part of the alleyway. Now, if I cross the road from there, I've got the park that leads down to I've got Melbourne's Federation Square, and then from there I've got the park next to that leads down to the Yarra River. Now, within a few minutes walk, you've got a great radius and so many opportunities. And if I want to find a cafe, there's Flinders Street. There's also Flinders Street Station. Now, I'm talking Melbourne, and anybody listening to this is going, I don't know what you're talking about. But all I'm suggesting is that you know as a photographer where you want to go. You know, the bride and groom will have some suggestions, and naturally you have to listen to them. That's their wedding day. But they'll also ask you for some. You want to try and find as many opportunities in the close geographical radius as you can that offer them trees and flowers, back alleyways and light and texture, you know, and then street scenes and cafe scenes, and you'll give them a lot of variety without having to get into cars, drive all over town, go here, go there. The sheer process of getting into a car, getting out of and driving somewhere, getting out of a car and reorganizing a bridal party is exhausting and so time-consuming. That you want to try and do as much as possible in as little a space as possible. Remembering, too, that your bride and groom, while young, have limited physical resources, and you don't want to exhaust them, and you don't want to exhaust yourself. If you're tired, you can't think. And on a wedding day, you really have to think. So you want to do, you want to do that. Then there's the thing, well, what do I do when I'm in this place? You know, well, yes, as I said, find the light and put them in it. Find the texture and work with the light. If it's a bluestone, cobblestone street, that's a texture. Work with it. If there's brown stone walls, work with it as a texture. Work the pose and the light to match so that you haven't got an incongruent, sort of feelings. The texture may evoke some kind of feeling, and you've set up a completely different kind of feeling in your photograph. Work the things so that they're congruent. If you're going to make them incongruent, make them deliberately incongruent so that, you create a visual tension that is interesting, but don't just muck it up, And then, of course, there are standard shots that you do want to get. There is the full length of the bride and groom, the half of the bride and groom, and the head and shoulder of the bride and groom. When I'm running a wedding workshop, I always make sure that I teach people that you put the bride and groom into a position whereby you move, they don't. So that you've put them there, that you can do a full length, you then do a half, and then you do a head and shoulders. You do that every time. Not only that, but I will put the bride there first, and I will do a full length, a half, and a head and shoulders of her in that situation. Then I go back, or I put the groom in a position with her, and I do the full length of the couple, the half, and the head and shoulders. No, sorry, I was just burping up my morning's Wheaties, and of course that's a shocking thing to do. Yeah, that's all right. More information than you needed. And so in that one, you've maximized your photo opportunities. You've got six photographs there at least, or three, six variations.
I was going to say, do you then take the bride out and do three of the groom or not?
Sometimes yes. Sometimes yes. Absolutely. Often the groom is a different kettle of fish. A bride looks lovely in the light. He may not look as masculine in that same situation. Often a man, you have to pose very, very differently. A woman in a wedding dress with a bouquet of flowers and a veil, you put her in the light and she's just going to look gorgeous.
Yeah.
Sometimes the man will as well, but not always. Often with a man, I like nothing more than to get him to lean against a nice hard texture like a brick or a stone and just sort of, cross his arms, look straight down the barrel of the camera and, sort of get him off to the side a little bit. That can be a very masculine sort of stance. But yes, if it does lend itself to that, I will get her out. Once the couple's done, I'll get her out and come back and I'll do three of him. So without having to move either of the couple too much, I've maximized my opportunities, got a lot of photographs, saved a lot of time, and even when the two of them are together, I will get them to do different things, like that one, that half shot where I'm shooting from, say, their waist up. I will get them to look down the barrel, get their faces nice and close, look down the barrel of the lens, smile, serious, bang, 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 bang. Then I'll just get them to, I'll just tell them, okay, I'm not here. What would you do if I'm not here? Which is, of course, the question to tell a young couple in love.
They'd probably say we wouldn't be here either.
Yeah, we wouldn't be here. We got better things to do. But, you just get them to sort of snuggle a little bit and just circle around your prey while they, bite each other's necks and kiss each other's mouths and, have a bit of fun. I don't like full-on, kissing shots often because they can be very uncomplimentary. Great activity, but not always the wonderful thing to focus. Photograph, but I will often just sort of get him to. I'll just come and say, I want you to bite her right there, right on the neck, and have a little bit of fun with her, and whisper in his ear, off to the side while you're doing so, tickle her ribs or something, and often you just get this great spontaneous photograph of her because she doesn't see it coming.
Yeah,
she thinks it's going to be a romantic photograph, and all of a sudden, he's stuck his hand into her ribs and it starts tickling her. Great photo opportunities, but you can do this without having to move them.
Yeah.
Once you've got them in the light, maximize those opportunities, singles, togethers, full length, half, head and shoulder. Then you're done with that, next, and you move them into different places. So that's a great place, that's a great way to start. And without running around like an idiot, without exhausting them, without exhausting you, you are working a place that, is giving you so many photo opportunities. And the great thing about it is the couple are amazed that you are able to pull out so many different kinds of photographs in one location. And, there are different ways of working the light. Use it as a rim light, use it as a front light, use it as a side light, just by simply circling around or moving the bride and groom within that light. Great opportunities there. Next week, I think what we should talk about is posing the bride and groom and handling and some interesting sort of maybe left of center photographs, different kinds of things that you can do on a wedding day that will set you apart or be fun to do or, have some, opportunities, different things that that make you an interesting photographer, give you a signature image. And in this, I'm thinking of one photographer with whom I've befriended as a result of this podcast even more is Heather. And I know you're probably listening.
Yep.
Heather Morris from Kentucky. And her and her husband have a I don't know what you call them in America, like a pickup truck, I think, sort of like a pickup
yep.
truck. A nice pickup. I don't think it's, an old beat-up thing. And they go to the wedding, and you know what they carry around? A red couch.
In the back of the pickup?
On the back of the pickup. They have a red couch. And they will turn up in the middle of a field or in an alleyway. And
just put the red couch out.
Put the red couch in the middle of nowhere. And the
excellent.
And it is fantastic. It is a signature vision thing
yeah.
that they have, and it identifies them, the red couch. Now, I don't want everybody, stealing their idea.
It would look great on a beach.
Oh, mate. Heather's photographs are like, you can imagine a red couch.
I don't think there are
couch.
Many beaches near Kentucky, but...
No, no. You know, a few lakes, maybe. But there's some great parks and woodlands, yeah. And, you know... But you can imagine a green, you know, this, yeah. this verdant green forest with a red couch. Bang, yeah. Right? You know, I mean, green and red are the opposites of each other, and it just stands out. But you put a red couch in a very dark sort of monochrome alleyway. Fantastic. Now, that's their signature vision. I don't want you guys to go out and buy red couches. Just leave Heather alone to do it. Mm. But I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
But there are other things that you can do to make yours a signature vision. You know, do you have an old suitcase with just married, you know, painted in hand, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have, you know, do you want to bring along a couple of, you know, a trombone and a trumpet? I mean, do you know, one for the groom, one for the bride. The groom will have the trombone, of course, but we won't go there. But the opportunities for you to create a signature vision. I'm just throwing around some stupid ideas, but they're there for you to explore, and this is what we do. Now, you'll want to have a few things up your sleeve, perhaps, but I think they're great ideas. Next week, we want to talk about posing and some interesting things that, you know, makes wedding photography fun, interesting, and gives you greater photo opportunities. So we'll probably spend a couple of weeks at least on the post-ceremony aspect of the wedding photography, because that's what most couples are thinking of when they book you as the photographer. Mm. Yes, they want you to photograph the ceremony and do the family photos and stuff, but when they're thinking of their images, this is the part of their day that they are saying to themselves, this is why we're booking our photographer, for this section of the day.
Yeah.
And just a word to the wise, when you are meeting with the couple, if you're meeting a meeting before they've really planned their day, tell them to leave enough breathing room on their day to, you know, allow you as much time as possible to work your magic. I always put it this way. I tell the couple, look, things are going to happen on your wedding day that you can't predict, that will take a lot of time. And I list the things, you know, the congratulations, the family photos, the travel, all the things that they don't itinerize or yeah. plan for, that just suck time out of their day that they can't know because they've never gotten married before. So tell the couple, allow yourself twice as much time as you think you'll need. But I put it this way. I say, look, you're paying me. I want you to work my butt off. I want to go home exhausted because you have had enough time. You've given me enough time to run around like an idiot on your wedding day and take a lot of photographs. I don't want you to be stressed. I want to be stressed. I want you to work my butt off. You're paying me good money. I want you to work me for it. And I want you to get your money's worth out of me. You know, and that makes them feel good. It makes them feel that you are really interested in doing something special for them, and you're not trying to get out of this. You're not trying to get out of it easy. You really want to do something for them. But the advantage to you is that they take that on board and they go, oh yeah, you know, we're paying this photographer so and so much. You know, let's just stop and have a really cool photo session, you know, and let's take some time. Let's even take some time out and have a little bit of a picnic because we're going to be hungry after our ceremony. You know, give them I'm serious. I suggest that to couples. Bring along, you know, a box of food, an esky of food, and some drink and some sandwiches. Have a little bit of a picnic, you know, get yourself feeling good after the ceremony, and then we're going to take some photos. But allow them, tell them to allow their day to breathe, and then it gives you all the opportunities for not only the photographs that we've talked about today, but the photographs we're going to talk a little bit more about next week.
Beautiful. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. I'm all fired up now. I want to keep going, but of course, you know, people only have so long to drive to work, you know, we can't keep it going forever.
Excellent. All right. Well, please, if you've got any comments that you want to make or you've got questions for Shelton, please drop us an email.
Absolutely.
You can email shelton@audiotu.com, or if you want to talk to me for whatever reason, you can email me at studio@audiotu.com.
You bet. Of course they want to talk to you, Bruce. You are the man. You are audiotu.com.
Yeah, well, I suppose. Yeah, absolutely.
If it wasn't for you, none of this would be happening.
That's true.
You are the man. You are the man.
And just a reminder, if you or someone you know requires any audio work, promos made for podcasts or imaging for podcasts or whatever, please drop me an email and I'll try and work out something for you.
A lot of benefit to be had in podcasting. So if you and your business can benefit from that, and I'm sure they can, Bruce is the man to see.
Thank you, matey.
No worries.
All right, we will talk with you again next week.
Yeah, you bet. Looking forward to it. Hi, everybody. And again, thank you so much for your well wishes. It's nice to know there are people out there who really care. It's very nice. I'm serious. I really appreciated it.
Absolutely. All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
You bet.
See ya.
See ya.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.